I do have some things that I need to cover and I talk about, but I might be late. You know, I might be off because I've been laid up on my back for the past several days. So y'all might be onto some stuff I don't know about yet. I don't know if y'all are up in arms and upset about shithole countries, or y'all are following Trump's adventures with porn stars, or y'all upset about the DACA student. I don't know what y'all on. I don't know what Pavlovian stimulation, what bell has been rung that has y'all salivating. So if I'm off, feel free to call in. If you remember the number, I don't know it right now. Real talk. They used to have it up, posted up around, so I didn't. Oh, they put it back up. I'm sorry. Call in 312-985-7834. That way, if my flu, my bout with the flu, if my exit from civilized society has knocked me off, and I'm not keeping up with what's relevant in the world or what type of reactionary Pavlovian stimulation they have the masses on, you could please help bring me up to date. I know they didn't raid Kodak Black's house, and they put some boy in a monkey shirt, I've been hearing. Anyway, give me another show or two to get caught up. But until then, I'm just going to talk about what I know. One thing I got a lot of questions about was our brother down in Texas, Rakeem Balogun, a.k.a. Christopher Daniels, who we are saying that was the first victim of the black identity extremists policy of the FBI. And I haven't spoken much about black identity extremists and everyone's upset and up in arms and doing the Holy Ghost dance behind black identity extremists, because it's utter nonsense, really. And I don't know why we feel like everything they do, we got to respond to. But I guess now that we have the first black identity inmate extremist brother in custody of the federal government, I guess it's real now, huh? But here's the thing. Every time that the government has sought to subvert black militancy or black consciousness or black empowerment, it's been a clandestine effort. They've never made a public announcement. So this is a relatively new thing. We only know about COINTELPRO because of the of whistleblowers, theft of documents, and investigative journalism and scholarship. The COINTELPRO was a secret program that had been going on for decades, that is still going on, and that the government has been, at best, they try to ignore it. They've never fully copped to it, to what they're doing, even though they've been outed. You know, they've always tried to maintain a certain level of plausible deniability. So you have to ask yourself, now we know in the past, all the way back when they took down Marcus Garvey and the UNIA, when they subverted Father Divine and his economic empowerment zone, even when the government provided resources and aid for to take down Tulsa, Oklahoma, Black Wall Street, or Rosewood, Florida, all the way up to the Panthers, their subversion of Malcolm X, their subversion of Dr. King, their subversion it's always been international. So, I mean, tomorrow is the anniversary of the assassination of Amilcar Cabral, depending on your enunciation. And when they tried and worked really hard to subvert the Cuban Revolution, when they took out in Guyana with Walter Rodney. And the list is almost endless, but the U.S. government has always worked through proxies, and they've always tried to maintain a sense of plausible deniability. To this day, they swear, oh, we don't know who or why Amilcar Cabral was killed. We just found out decades after his assassination, they just came clean about the CIA participation in the assassination of Patrice Lumumba in the Congo. So you have a state apparatus, and the state and the center of power, you know, from the British Empire, the British Crown, and then Germany will join with the rest of Western Europe, or they'll break out on their own. When you deal with, there was a time where Portugal and Spain were the seat of white power. So even though white power, the throne, the center, the fulcrum of white power has changed over time, it has been consistent in that whites will rule. And now that that seat, that throne, that crown is now being in the United States. It's the new world. So the old world passed the white imperialist baton to the new to its new world counterparts. And throughout that time, they have always preferred, especially when it came to subverting their subjects, clandestine. They've always kept it secret. They've kept their programs secret. They've always had, that's the whole point of giving it these code names and acronyms and secret agent man and, you know, James Bond type stuff. That's why, I mean, it was really disgusting a few years ago. I think people have forgotten. People were campaigning to have Idris Elba play 007, MI5's most highly decorated agent. And we went through that okie-doke, see? When the most recognized, most celebrated black man in media, who was Bill Cosby, was I Spy, and going all over the world helping this white man and helping the U.S. government overthrow third world upstarts, overthrow guerrilla movements and people who stood against U.S. imperialism, and had black kids like, one day I want to grow up and be an agent against my own people. But even then, even when they show the movies, it's always secret. You know, he didn't go in and flash his badge. He'd walk in, sat at the bar, and he wants his martini stirred, not shaken, and all of that. So you have to ask yourself, they called this out the gate, this black identity extremism. They came out the gate like, we've got a program where we're going to target black identity extremists. And they came off of brothers like Micah Johnson. They had a rash of black shooters who were targeting police. Now, tinfoil hat time, full disclosure, every single one of them brothers came through the military-industrial complex. And I don't know, some of y'all been to the military, and I don't know, some of y'all were consciously going through it, some of y'all haven't. We've had some... a lot of our people come through the military training, but if you know something about military training, it's about totally deconstructing you psychologically, totally deconstructing your identity, and then imposing or implanting a whole new identity on you. So that's why when they come in, they shave your head, they take away your individuality, your identity, and they call you maggot. They call you scum. And they don't, everybody has to respond the same, no matter what they say to you. So if you're sergeant, you know, if your superior officer comes to you and say, good morning, you say, sir, good morning, sir. Yes, thank you, sir. And he could be saying, oh, you look nice today. You're doing a good job. Or he could come and say, you maggot, you son of a whore. And you have to respond no matter what they say to you, whether it's complimentary or the most degrading, disrespectful thing anyone can imagine. You still say, sir, yes, sir, kill, kill, kill. Right? And so that's all about deconstructing your psychology, regardless of the condition, because they want to train you so that whether you are scrubbing the toilet at the Barracks or you've got 50 caliber rounds flying over your head, somebody trying to kill you because you're in their country messing with them for no reason, for reasons, but no good reason. They want you to be able to respond and be able to detach from reality. So anyway, before we get all into the psychological deconstruction and reconstruction that men, and then that's within a European, Eurocentric, Western context. So you are an African or you're a black man or woman, and you're going through this. So not only are you being psychologically deconstruction and reconstruction, you're doing so within an oppressive, discriminatory, racist context. So anyway, long story short, everybody knows a little something about MK Ultra. Everybody know a little something about the mind control techniques and the brainwashing technique. Everybody know a little something. Everybody got their own little ideas about that. But it's just, we should question, Those weren't black men committing those atrocities. Those were veterans. I think your identity in a Western context, once you're a veteran, that overtakes all other identities. Hoorah. And you don't believe me, don't get mad at me. Oh, I'm black. I'm black before I'm a vet. I'm black first, race first. But you go talk to your average veteran and tell me what identity marker that they overwhelms all others. They're so quick to tell you. They're kind of like vegans in that context, or the way y'all imagine vegans are. Can't wait to tell. I'm a veteran. I've never had any interaction with a black veteran that didn't work that into the conversation, no matter what we were talking about. What's your favorite vegan pudding? Well, as a veteran, like, man, what that got to do with pudding? They work that in because it's you can't blame them. You can't be mad at them. And the only way to overcome that, and we've had some black veterans come out of the military and re-deconstruct. You have to re-deconstruct that identity and then reassert your, not just your African identity, your cultural identity, but your very fundamental humanity. And that's why veterans are overrepresented in prison. In their overall population, they're overrepresented in the homeless population. They're overrepresented in people who are prescribed psychoreactive, psychotropic drugs, because they got to do that in mind. Because believe it or not, we've been told that we're natural born killers. Humanity, they say, and Europeans have for a long time have said, everybody's the same, basically. We're superior. Some are more the same than the others. But they have all taken the position that humanity is about the same. And the white man runs the world. But the moment, if an African got the opportunity, if an Asian got the opportunity, if any other people got the opportunity to be in the position that white folks are, we do the exact same thing. Raping corpses and enslaving, stealing resources. Now, we've got 90% of human interaction, human history, recorded and prehistory. Remember, because before white folks learn to write stuff down, they call that prehistory, even though the majority of human history happened in the European historical context, what they call prehistory. Because it's prehistoric. If Europeans weren't in it, then it shouldn't even be relevant. So they came and say, well, they went around the world. There were a bunch of tribes living in the jungles of Africa. There were a bunch of nomadic men chasing buffaloes and eating and making instruments out of buffalo intestines. And the aboriginals, excuse me, were just roaming around, hopping around like kangaroos. There was nothing going on around the world. Now, that is a total distortion of history. But what they have said is that we've shown that not only can people live that the normal state of humanity, absent Western psychopathology, the normal state of humanity is peace. The normal interaction is one of cooperation, not competition. The normal state is gender leveling, in terms of it's not the natural state that men dominate women. You know, Europeans went all over the world and found what they had to call, they came to call matriarchies. Because it's like, somebody's got to dominate. I don't see the men dominating, so this must be a matriarchy. Somebody's got to dominate. How do you have social interactions or complex social structures without somebody dominating? Who are the elites? And so they just went in, and the very concept of a chief, Europeans invented. So they say everybody's like us, and we're like everybody else. We're just better at being human, and then we're better at humanity. They don't want to say we're better at domination, we're better at conquest, we're better at warfare, we're better at systematic rape, we're better at mass murder, we're better at sustaining systems of injustice. They can't say that. So they pretend that everybody's the same and then they're better than it, even though, but we're not the same. And then we, with our idiotic selves, try to say, okay, then we got to match them. We need some black banks. We need some black businesses. We need black everything white folks got. We need black version of it and to outcompete them. We need to stem and all this nonsense. Anyway, what that got to do with black identity extremists? The whole impetus, what I'm talking about is the fundamental psychology, or what Dr. Marimba Ani called our acele. I don't know why I'm doing all this jawbone. Where's my kerchief? I'm sorry. y'all gonna have to bear with me. This is gonna be the struggle show. It's gonna probably take me another couple of shows to. Oh, here's my kerchief. Sorry. The whole show gonna have to shut down if I don't have my kerchief, handkerchief. That's short for handkerchief for you uncultured brutes who didn't get no good Catholic school upbringing. Anyway, back to the topic. So what I'm saying is that these black men, and some of us have turned into folk heroes, which I don't understand how we're making folk heroes of these guys who are going out to do their things. You know, we got like these black Davy Crockett. And remember one of the first black folk hero of the modern era, of the 2000, under the Obama, was Christopher Dorner. Remember that big, thick-neck brother, bald head? You know, looked like LL Cool J. And he was going to take out all the LAPD, and he was a veteran. And black folks was like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I'm like, this dude was an arc conservative. He wasn't killing for us. He wasn't killing for justice. He wasn't a guerrilla. He wouldn't have fought with Che Guevara. He was in the U.S. military. He was out trying to murder Che Guevara's and Amilcar Cabral. His beef with the system is, I signed on to the LAPD to bash black heads, and y'all are not letting me bash black heads. So I'm going to kill you because you're preventing me from bashing black heads. And black folks like, yeah, he killing LAPD. He's fighting for justice. And so he was a veteran. And even in this society, they got the self, what they call it, self-radicalized. Or whether you were radicalized by the internet radicalized, or organizationally radicalized. But if you're in the United States and you haven't been off to an Al-Qaeda training camp, they call you self-radicalized. But if you're a former veteran, like if I go off to an Al-Qaeda training camp and I start letting off and I come back here and kill people, then they be like, oh, Al-Qaeda is responsible. But if I join the U.S. military and I'm a decorated officer in the U.S. military, and even the weapons and tactics that I use to go and just kill up people are the exact identical tactics and strategies that were taught to me by the military is blameless. They blaming me. They blaming black folks who said, listen, I don't like the fact that black people are being murdered by the police without justice. I don't like the fact that black people are not getting our reparations. I don't like the fact that black girls are coming up missing. Oh, then you're responsible for these mass shooters. I didn't put this dude through no, train him to be a killer and arm and equip him to kill people. So anyway, that's where the black identity changed. Brothers like Micah, you had the guy who was talking about, who was insane, that guy that shot the Asian cops. They weren't even white cops. He shot a black and an Asian cops. He said he was putting in New York. He drove up from where? Philly or something, Baltimore. And he said, I'm putting wings on pigs. But before he shot the cops, he shot his girlfriend in the stomach and tried to kill her. So anyway, they're pretending as though black people exposing injustices and calling out for justice is provoking these people who have been through the Western system of killing, who've been fed a steady diet of media. They say before a child hits adolescence, they've seen, what, 250,000 murders on if they are with regular, just regular TV consumption. The average child sees, average American, not a child, but the average American sees on average 3,000 ads a day. I didn't know I was seeing 3,000 of anything. I ain't seen 3,000 blades of grass or stars in the sky on a daily basis. But it's so passive. It's in the margins that we're not conscious of it. So if anybody's radicalizing people to kill, it's the dominant system. It's the dominant media. It's the U.S. military and the media and the educational system. But anyway, white folks ain't taking blame. White folks won't even claim Trump. They won't even take blame for nothing. They won't accept blame. They, white people, yes, all whites, even good whites, are so readily to accept credit. We put a man on a moon. And the internet. And airplanes. Greens, beans, potatoes, tomatoes. We've done it all. We are the saviors of humanity. We brought humanity out of darkness. It's like, okay, fine. I'll give you that credit. If, okay, now, in order to get out of darkness, we've got some other issues. Global warming, species extinctions, and all. Oh, no, that's mankind. That's just human nature. It's like you want to take individual personal credit for the good stuff, and then the what they call, they came up with this word. I agree. I think it's a wonderful word. I don't know why we don't hear it more, especially in the black conscious community. Externalities. They have externalized much of the fallout. So I'll make this wonderful invention and give it to the world. And in the end, it causes cancer. And I want all the credit for this wonderful invention, but I will take none of the blame for the cancer that it causes. And I'll take the billions of dollars. See how that works? That's the externality. Ford Motor Company manufactures millions of cars along with all these other motor companies. And they take in billions of dollars in profit for manufacturing these cars. And that's not to count the government subsidies and all the other benefits. But for asthma, air pollution, all the deaths by vehicular accidents, I ain't got nothing to do with that. I've got nothing to do with that. That's called an externality of the auto industry. So they just not down to take blame. They're just not down for finger pointing. Now, these are the same people who built the world's biggest prison industrial complex. And they locking people up. Like, the United States has, like, forever. Like, they can literally lock you away forever. Some of the most unforgiving people. They have a whole judiciary system. A federal, several layers to their federal, state, and local judiciary. They judge, they want to point fingers, blame. But at the same time, when it comes to oppressing, I'm not a victim. You can't say you're a victim if you're under oppression. You can't judge the system. You can't judge the society. But they're going to judge you and throw you away and lock you up forever. What's my sentence? Forever. Can I get a number? Infinity is the number. We're going to lock you up forever. And these are the same people that say, oh, you can't judge. It doesn't make sense to me. Somehow, y'all make sense of it. Somehow it works itself out for y'all. This whole thing is madness. I just can't get with it. Anyway, that's a long, convoluted way to get all the way around to this thing of black identity extremists. White folks said black people are out here shooting. Black people we've trained. Black people we've armed. Black people we've driven insane are out here shooting. But the reason they're out here shooting is because of there are other black people saying because of Black Lives Matter, because black people speaking out against racism and injustice is causing other blacks to take up arms and become extremists. So it's not your oppression that makes a black person an extremist. It's black people who talk about oppression. Fine, I'll take it, whatever. If that's what you want to do, if that's how y'all want to play it, fine. But what we've known throughout history. Oh, but can I also touch on the point that black people have some of the lowest rates of mass shooting, politicized violence, and all that. Let's forget white men and white militias, white separatist groups, white sovereignty movement engage in infinitely more violence. In infinitely more political-based terrorism, identity-based terrorism. And if you incorporate, if you're going to be honest and talk about the crimes of the state, black people, it's not even a drop in the bucket. But they want to act like this is a thing. They want to act like it's a thing. And so we're going to, of course, react. We're going to cry, we're going to march, we're going to protest, and now we have our first case of a brother whom they say, even though that's not on the docket, it was a joint effort. And what the state is saying, after they went after Rakim Balogun, They said that they were illegal weapons trafficking, that he was buying and reselling weapons illegally. And that's why the FBI brought in the ATF. And we used to call the ATF and the BATF the hillbilly FBI. Because they alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. That's some old backwoods stuff. When I was a kid growing up in Missouri, I would see the ATF folks, and they just zoom right past the hood. Now, the feds was always in the hood. Every time they had a little drug dealer, and the drug dealers were buying, they would buy rim shops, they would have hip-hop clothing store, they all had hair salons and barber shops. And so, I mean, this has happened more than once. I'd get up in the morning heading to school, and on the way to school, I'll pass by a local barber shop, local rim shop, local candy store, convenience store, bodega type situation. And there's people with those FBI jackets, those windbreakers with the big FBI signs going, rifling through files, opening safes. Because the drug dealer then diversified and put his money, spread his money around the hood. And when the feds come in. But one thing you notice, that when the feds come in and take down the biggest drug dealer in the hood, there ain't one junkie that goes without their hit that day. I think the feds come in with the new guy they want to set up. Like, all right, you're getting a little too big for your britches. You're divesting. You know, you're getting out of, you're making more money from legal enterprises than you are from illicit enterprise. You're getting too big for your britches. Time to pull you out and put in some other thirsty little race trader to do our bidding. So I used to see the feds in the black community all the time, thanks to Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton's attempt to bring us to heel, hunting super predators in the black community. I used to see it all the time. But you seldom saw the ATF. They call it ATF or BATF, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. But if you go to rural Missouri, if you go to the Ozark Mountain Country, if you go to Raytown, Blue Springs, Smithville, Missouri, if you go to these areas, and I'd find myself out in those areas, those pig farms and trailer parks, you see BATF agents all the time. Because it's alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, which are all legal. I mean, I don't know why you need a separate agency to police. It's all legal. But anyway, that we used to call that the hillbilly or the redneck FBI. And the feds will come in to the hood and the ATF will go. But this dude, this brother, this activist, had a joint ATF and FBI raid. And they have disappeared, this brother. Well, he hasn't disappeared. Actually, we know exactly where. He's obviously not under terrorism charges because habeas corpus, which means present the body. We know exactly where he is. If you go to the Guerrilla Mainframe website, they have his number. You know, when they give you his inmate number, you can put money on his books right now. And so he hasn't been disappeared. He's not in Guantanamo. He's not in a secure federal facility. So they're going to – looks like they're just running this pretty much by the books. He has been detained. I don't know if he's been given a bail hearing, but if for the amount of time, like I said, I've been out in utter misery. But long story short, the hillbilly FBI and the regular FBI then came, and black folks are like black identity extremists. They said they were going to come for us, and they came for us. And I say that doesn't add up historically. My kerchief is gone again. Give me a moment. Lord have his mercy. Oh, okay, I found my kerchief. I'm telling you, if I don't have my kerchief, I'm going to have to shut this whole thing down. I'm struggling as it is. You could probably hear the struggle in my voice. But anyway, back to this black identity extremism. We black folks, if you're going to be a revolutionary, if you're going to be a black identity extremist, if you're going to just be a basic, decent human being, you have to be a critical thinker. I don't even care. If you're not a critical thinker, there's no way you can be a moral person. The only way to be moral, the only way to be a decent human being, let alone something grander like a revolutionary, a freedom fighter, a just, social justice warrior. And I meet a lot of people who think they can skip over the critical thinking and be like, in my heart, I want what's good for people. In my heart, I want what's best. My vibrational frequency resonates at a level, a universal level. I love all beings. That doesn't make you a good or moral person. It makes you insane. But if everybody else is insane, you just fall into this insane soup and it looks kind of, you don't really notice the individual insanity in a collective insane situation. But the only true good people, even if we go throughout history, you have to be a critical thinker. And the reason you must be a critical thinker in order to be a good person is you look up the good German phenomenon. Where you had a lot of people in Nazi Germany that were law-abiding citizens of the German Nazi regime. And the German Nazi regime had a lot of good policy. One of their biggest emphasis was public health. The German Nazi government to this day has come up with public health policies that are followed by the United States and many other countries in terms of screening for communicable diseases, vaccination and inoculations, public sanitation. And so a lot of the, a lot of what's going on all over. You know, and people joke, yeah, Hitler made the trains run on time. That's a joke, but it's literal. So, there are a lot of good Germans. And the good Germans are the people who are baseline following the norms of the society. And they have no real ability or willingness to say, even though I'm following the laws of the society, even though I'm following the policies of the society, even though I fit well, I pay my bills on time, I get my children off to school and make sure they're vaccinated when the state says so, I follow traffic laws, I pay my taxes, I vote every November, I'm a good person. No, you're not. You're a lawful person. But you're not a good person unless you step back from all of that, step back from paying taxes and going school shopping and calling in to vote for American Idol or whatever show. You have to take a step back from all of that and say, is this really overall? I know this is what everybody does, and I know I get pats on the backs and checks in the mail when I do this, but is this really the right thing to do? If you don't get philosophical, if you don't get introspective, if you're not a critical thinker, you're not a moral person, you're a trained primate. You go to the circus, and thank goodness circuses are finally getting over. I mean, I don't know why it took to the year 2015, 2016 for humans to figure out it's not right for us to make animals perform for our pleasure. But back in the day, prior to this level of enlightenment that we've obtained as human people in the West, you see that bear riding the tricycle? You see that lion jumping through the hoops? The lion's not doing that because it's the right or wrong thing. I'm trained. I'm responding to stimulus. So if you're just responding to stimulus, you know nothing more than a jumble of neurons and adipose tissue and sinew and connective tissue. You're not fully human. And if you're not fully human, you can't be moral. You can say, I'm lawful. That's what I think people should say. Let's just be accurate. I ain't even saying you should be a moral person. But the only way to be a moral person is to be a critically thinking person. And you question everything. There's a new law. There's a new policy. There's a new memo going around saying we're going to do this instead of that. And you're going to say, huh, wait a minute. Because most people want to know, did it come down from the proper authorities? Yes. Do they have an enforcement mechanism? Yes. Then I will obey. And that's how you get Nazi Germany. All right, I don't know why we have to use Nazi Germany. Because United States. That's how you get the United States of America. And all these lawful scumbags who obey laws. And I mean, you just go to your local suburban Walmart parking lot and you look at all these good people who don't shoplift. I don't murder, I don't kill. But they're part of destroying the world's ecosystems and they don't give it a second thought. They're automatons. They're lawful. So there's a big difference between being righteous, being moral, being just, and being lawful. The men who were beating slaves and raping our ancestors were lawful. They were within not just local law, but they were within constitutional law. And many of those men swore they were good men. They go to church. They read the Bible. So whenever you find somebody, especially somebody that claims to be righteous, claims to be conscious, claims to be revolutionary, and they're not critical thinkers, you better watch yourself. Keep a safe distance from that dude. When he comes into the meeting hall, you sit opposite that person, as far from on the other side of the table as you can. Anyway, all the way back to this black identity extremist. We have to be critical thinkers if you're going to be a revolutionary, whether you want to be a righteous revolutionary or amoral, you know, prince of Pan-Africanism who does a lot of bad stuff but claims to do bad stuff for good outcome, whatever you want to self-identify. So you have to ask yourself, why are they announcing this ahead of time? All the other times they've come for us, they've tried to subvert black militants. They've done it clandestine. They've done it through proxies and through secret agents. When they took down Fred Hampton, they had somebody drug him. They had one of his own guys, internal guys on the payroll, Bobby Rush, Hutchu Sneeze, Bobby Rush. But now they're announcing ahead of time. And they're like, blacks, we're coming for you. And we've given it a name, black identity extremists. They've had congressional hearings, and we're being very public. And that's the thing that should make you go, hmm. Remember that back in the 90s? Things that make you go, hmm. Arsenio Hall used to have it. And then they even had a song. Things that make you go, You got to think like, damn, why y'all announcing? We know y'all coming for us. Ain't no way you a black conscious and you know. George Jackson said, if you are going up against the government and you don't expect or you don't prepare for a backlash, you are either naive or you have a death wish. We know y'all coming for us. We know y'all gonna mess with us. Y'all gonna mess with us on paperwork, credit. Y'all might just do credit score. Some of us revolutionaries are so fragile, you know, they go to the revolutionary meeting to overthrow capitalism, and they have one minor disagreement on how to arrange the chair or whether we should pour libations or not, and they abandon the struggle. They run off screaming. So they have different methods, but one thing that's been consistent is now you're announcing it. And let me tell you why they're announcing this black identity extremist, because it ain't got nothing to do with black people. Let me let that marinate. This black identity extremist nonsense has nothing to do. That's not for, by, or of us. That has nothing to do with us. I said it. Because how do you know that it has nothing to do with us? They wouldn't have announced it. That's not how they deal with us. That's not how they deal with us black radicals. They always want plausible deniability. Malcolm X was killed by the Nation of Islam. Dr. King was killed by a lone gunman. Fred Williams in exile. Asada in exile. Pete O'Neill in exile. Geronimo Jujaga Pratt was a murderer. We locked him up for a homicide. We didn't lock it. They didn't label any of these guys nothing. They had labels for them. They had code names for them. They had files for them, but they never admitted it. Even when they got busted, they still sat there in the congressional hearings. Well, I plead the fifth. They don't. So by the time they're announcing something that it's on the congressional records, that it's in the New York Times, that Jeff Sessions is sitting before a panel of congressmen talking about black identity extremists, you know it ain't about us at that point. It's about white people. That black identity extremist label is for white consumption, not for black subversions. And I know we hate it. We love our personal attention from white folks. Like I said, black people, we like to believe that we have a special relationship. Batman and Joker. And Batman ain't black, but he's dresses in all black, close enough. And then the white-faced Joker. We like to believe that we have a special, even though it's an antagonistic, it's a hostile, we like to believe we're special to white people. White people got some kind of hang-up about us. We like to believe that, you know, they enslaved us. They imitate us. They take our music and they try to. And you got all these black scholars and all these black people talking about white people's obsession with us. And we kind of, even though it's bad, even though it makes us suffer multi-generational oppression, even though that, it still makes us feel kind of special. Like, yeah, they hate us because they ain't us. They want to be us. But we're not that special. Which is something you have to understand about the West. Is it don't matter if it's a black man or a polar bear, I'm gonna kill it, I'm gonna eat it, I'm gonna rape it, I'm gonna colonize it, I'm gonna, they, even their own women, like Dr. Clark said, and I hate to be crass, but when you're speaking on such a horrible topic, you gotta use horrible words. Dr. Clark said, and it's not just Dr. Clark, many of our critical thinkers, men who are truly moral, and women, Marimba Ani, even Dick Gregory. Basic bottom line is somebody going to be the nigga. Because myself, in order for me to be the white man, I can't be a white man without a nigga. And we like to believe that nigga title is exclusive to black people. As much as we hate it, it's still ours. We reclaim it. We're debating about it. Do we say it? Can we say it? Who can say it? We like to believe. But let me tell you something. If you go back, the white man has niggified white women, white children, white disabled people, white other Southern Europeans, Central Europeans, Eastern Slavic Europeans. They'll niggify whoever. If every black person became a black identity extremist tomorrow and they locked us all up and it wasn't another black person on the street, believe you me, in under 24 hours, there will be another group of people that they are oppressing, that they are blaming for all the crimes and downfall of the society, even if they have to go amongst their own. You saw after they, during the civil rights movement and the black power movement, after they had assassinated every black leader they could figure out to assassinate, exiles, those they did, they failed to assassinate, subverted all the black organizations, they were still hungry for blood. Go look up Kent State. They started shooting white, finding white progressives, and it started framing white liberals and white progressives and blowing up white liberals and assassinating white liberals and exiling and framing. Right now, there are white political prisoners from that era. Sean Swain. He was like, okay, let's get the anarchist. Let's get the liberals. Let's get the white communists. Somebody got to die. Remember that? Biggie Small. Somebody got to die. Somebody got to be the nigga. And we didn't exhaust it, our nigga box. There ain't no more niggas in this nigga box. We got to fill it back up with somebody else. Let's go to Latin America. We know they're Spaniards. We know Spain is in Europe. But hell, let's pretend Spaniards aren't white. Let's pretend Spanish is a new world language. It's not an old world European Latin language. And they go and subverting and overthrowing Latin American countries that are white. And literally, look up the history. Those white people in Argentina and Venezuela are like, why are you down here colonizing, bombing, killing, assassinating? We're white too. And believe you me, if they ran out of people to kill and assassinate, they did it to Canada. The United States invaded Canada. I know they don't write about it, Canada, but the U.S. has colonized and invaded Canada, tried to. They got missiles trained on Great Britain. U.S. nuclear missiles are targeting London right now. Somebody gonna be the nigga. These people gotta cannibalize something. And if you lock them in a room, they'll start gnawing off their own arms. They'll enslave their own foot. Something got to get it. Somebody going to get it. That's just, they can't do it. They can't. It's like breathing. So we like to believe we're special. That's my point. We like to believe we hold a special place in white folks' heart or a special place in their hatred. And we guard that position. When the gays step up and be like, well, we've been tarred and feathered. We've been legally discriminated against. We've had housing discrimination, employment discrimination. We can't fight in the military, and we're going to have our gay rights. Black people are like, how dare you try to compare to us? Talk about the black civil rights or gay is the new blacks. How dare you? We're special to whitey. When the immigrants, DACA, black folks right now mad about DACA. I don't care nothing about them immigrants. Me and whitey against the world. He ain't discriminating against immigrants. He discriminate. Don't dare. He only has discriminatory eyes for me and no one else. We don't like when white folks cheat on us and go try to oppress somebody else. when you got us to oppress at home? Why are you sniffing around? Why are you stepping out to oppress when you got somebody to oppress at home? It's sick. It's a sick relationship. And maybe I'm not putting it in the best words. I'm not being academic enough about this, and I've got a mocking tone, and this is something serious. But Amos Wilson talked about it. If you want a more academic assessment of the fact that we have this special, that oppression is a two-way street. We've been doing this dance since the rise of the Greeks. You know, since Hannibal been telling the Europeans, stay the hell off of African continent, told the Greeks, don't come round here. Since Hannibal had to ride some elephants through the Alps just to get white folks out of his business. We've been doing this dance, but we ain't been exclusive. Well, maybe we've been exclusive, but our oppressor has not exclusively wanted to oppress us. And I know we like to think we're special, but if every black person vanished tomorrow, they would be on to the next one. And if everybody on this planet was white, then they would, just like we saw, when they were locked in the caves and hills of Europe, when they didn't know or hadn't discovered us yet, they still had slavery. And I'm going to say this one more again. The European was already an expert, a master, the most skilled enslaver, colonizer, discriminator before he got to Africa's shores. He already knew how to do systematic land theft and genocide before he reached the New World, before he ever misidentified the Indians, before Columbus sailed the ocean blue. When Columbus came here in 1492, the men on the ship already knew. They knew what to do when they get off the boat. They didn't have to have a conference and say, okay, we found all these native folks. What are we going to do? They already knew. Okay, put the machine in motion. The genocidal imperialism land theft machine was all. They just cranked it up. How did they know to do that? How did they know to do that? Because they've been doing it. To who? To their own damn women and children. To their own skin folk. Anyway, give me a second. I have to step away for just a second to deal with something. And I'll... Oh, goodness. Man, this flu, boy. But I've been hearing that this flu is man-made. Whatever. I got to go get another kerchief. So give me a moment. I'm just going to take a short break, and I'll be back to wrap this particular discussion up. I promise. All right, but we're going to hear some classic tunes. Give me a moment. Yes. Yes.
Yes. I think very deeply. I think very deeply. I think very deeply.
In about 4 seconds, a teacher will begin to speak.
I think very deeply.
Let us begin. What, where, why, or when?
Below we explain like instructions to a game. See, I'm not insane. In fact, I'm kind of rational. When I be asking you who is more dramatic, this one or that one, the white one or the black one, pick the punk and I'll jump up to attack one. KRS-One is just the guy to lead a crew. Right up to your face and diss you. A lot of suckers would like to forget me, but they can't. Because like a champ, I have got a record of knocking out the frauds in a second. On the mic, I believe that you should get loose. I haven't come to tell you I've got juice. I just produce, create, innovate on a higher level. I'll be back.
But for now, just sackle. In about 4 seconds, a teacher will begin to speak. Play the nine and you play the target. You all know my name, so I guess I'll just start it. Or should I say start this? Start this. I'm the artist. Often new concepts and they're hardest. Yo, cause I'm a teacher and Scott is a scholar. It ain't about money, cause we all make dollars. That's why I walk with my head up. When I hear whack rhymes, I get fed up. Rappers like a setup. A lot of games.
A lot of suckers with colorful names. I'm so and so. I'm this, I'm that. Huh. But they all just wick, wick, whack, wick, whack. I'm not red or black or white. I'm brown from the Boogie Down Productions. Of course, our music be thumping. Others say they're bad, but they're bugging. Let me tell you something now about hip-hop, about D-Nice, Melody, and Scott LaRock. Oh, that's a shame. Only one still alive from that list is D Nice. Melanie and Skylar Rock are no longer with us. Anyway, I could rap that whole album by all means necessary. And I know I'm indulging myself because I don't feel well, so people think when they're sick they have a right to act like babies. Where was I? Okay, we're not special. And when white folks say black identity extremists, and when they announce publicly, when they talk about black folks publicly, they're not talking about two black folks. They're talking to white folks. And they, here's the bottom line. Let me just skip to the chase. Is that the right way to say it? Let me cut to the chase. Let me sniff to the fat. I'm going to just make up my own thing. I'm of that age now where I could just, you know, let me slam it down on the flip. Because, you know, and that's it. It's the same. And maybe it'll catch on, maybe it won't. But no. Stop that, please. Where was I? Oh, sorry. White people, at this stage of capitalism, this is the gutting, hollowing out stage of capitalism. And Trump ran saying that he was going to bring back jobs to white people. He said that he was going to open up the mines because he thought, which is not true. I know we'd like to believe that. But white folks really thought that white people stopped mining because it was bad for the environment. And as sick as I am, I'm trying to I want to laugh hysterically, but then I might go into a coughing fit. So I'm going to hold that back. But they white folks really thought, and some of y'all black folks really thought, oh, mining, coal mining is in steep decline because, you know, dead, you know, possums. And so he said regulation. Even black people, even some of y'all black folks are so stupid to run around talking about regulate. There's too much regulation. But that's not why coal jobs went away. It had nothing to do with the environment. These people don't care about the environment. They don't care. They will consume, cannibalize. Like Dale Jones said, these are the first people in human history that had to pass a law making it illegal to work your own children to death. So the very people who literally worked their own children to death, took them literally centuries to figure out maybe we shouldn't. Maybe we can send our kids to school and put other kids in mines. They didn't stop putting kids in mines. They just stopped putting their own kids in mines. And like we said, the moment there are no other little brown kids to put in mines, then white kids right back to the mines with you. And there are some white kids, they even their white skin ends in protecting them from the mines and the nuclear fallout. Just ask a little Ukrainian kid. Anyway. So, I'm sorry. Gathering my thoughts. Anyway. Black people. White folks thought that Trump made a lot of promises that he couldn't keep because he lied about the reasons. The reasons why the coal mining jobs went away is because, number one, the industry became more mechanized, so they didn't need as many laborers. You know, some of y'all still think coal mining is a man with a metal hat with a little candle holder on the front of his hat. So it became they've employed this new method called mountaintop removal. As opposed, instead of mining into the mine, they just blow the top off the mine and scoop it out the top. So it was less labor intensive. The industry became less labor intensive. Number two, they came up with natural gas. And natural gas, which is not really, I know it sounds good. Oh, natural gas, highly polluting, extractive industry. But with hydraulic fracking, and this all this proprietary chemicals and technology for extracting natural gas. And the thing about a coal fire plant, they're really easy to convert from coal fire to natural gas burning. And natural gas was a cheaper and somewhat less polluting. You know, it's like the difference between stabbed being versus being shot. I don't know. You which is better? I don't know. But I guess stabbing. I don't know. I really can't call it. I'm not an expert in that field. But anyway, So the coal jobs left because they were, bottom line, it was more profitable to do something else. But they were told by their white politicians, regulators in Washington, D.C., then regulated your job. They're trying to protect owls. They're trying to protect deer and little rodents. And they're trying to take a hard, real American jobs. So they were told that coal jobs were coming back, which they aren't, because the reason that they left, they lied about the reason that the coal jobs went away, and they lied about bringing them back. And then Trump said that he was going to put up tariffs, and he was going to literally start a trade war, but he don't know that his homie Clinton, and Clintons are very good friends with the Trumps, made China the most favorite nation, trade nation. And what else, something else he didn't understand, even though all this stuff has made in China, made in China, made in China, those are U.S., the controlling interest in all those made in China sweatshops are European elite white people. And of course, the Chinese, just like the African oligarchs, they get their kickbacks. That's white folks' money. And remember when Trump went on David Letterman and David Letterman said, I sent a couple of my interns out, and I had them buy some Trump steaks, some Trump ties, and a bunch of Trump artifacts. And you said that you're going to bring jobs from China. And then he's like, Trump ties, made in China. Everything Trump is made in China. They went to the Trump Tower, into the gift shop, in the tourist center of the Trump Tower. Everything there made in China. So Trump lied and was like, yo, we're going to put up trade embargoes, and we're going to put tariffs so that Chinese products, that, and we're going to make it so that it's cheaper to make products here in America. And you really had rednecks in rural America. You really had, you know, graynecks in suburban America. Paste. You really had these butterball white folks thinking they're going to be sitting somewhere making iPhones. You really thought Billy Bob Thornton was going to be making your Nikes. They really thought that. And so Trump made a slew of promises he couldn't keep. He had no, I think he thought, because like Obama was making promises he had no intentions of keeping. Obama knew he was lying. I don't think Trump knows. Trump is like, remember when Bush was president and he was like, we're going to colonize the moon and that's going to be a springboard and we're going to colonize Mars. He really thought little moon vehicles and us wearing those glass bulb hats. He's an idiot. He didn't know what he was saying. He didn't know what the hell he was talking about. And so it's, I don't know with Trump. Trump is a liar, but I don't think he's intelligent enough to consistently tell a lie. I think he just makes stuff up in the moment. And it's true when he says it at that moment. So anyway, Trump made a lot of promises he couldn't keep. And so when you make, I don't know, if y'all, some of y'all, I don't know, we got some Macs in the audience, some real players in the audience. And one thing I know from just observing y'all, I've never been a Mac, but I observe. I'm an observant person. You promise the woman the world, but you got to give her a little something to keep her enticed. Got to give her a little something. So you promise things you know you can't do, but you do the few things that you can do and you inflate what little you do. So a Mac will run up on a woman and be like, woman, diamonds and pearls and silk. I'll have you riding unicorns and wearing the finest furs and I'll fly you to the Orient, baby. You come with me, you come work for me and your life will never be the same, baby. And then they notice, they like, this dude got me in a dank, bedbug-infested transient hotel, and I'm supposed to be on the Riviera. And so what do? The players, when the jig is up, they start highlighting what little bit they did do. When I found you on the street, you know, you didn't have no good Wonder Bread with the bologna. You was eating generic bread. Now you're eating Wonder Bread, so I don't want to hear it. So they play up what little bit they're doing to overshadow all the stuff they failed to do. Now, Trump is doing the same thing. He told the white, I'm going to have coal jobs. And I don't know. I wouldn't vote. If somebody came to me, I don't know, white people, what is up? I'm going to have to get a white guest on this show to explain white people to me. And yes, because they like to go get one half a black dude to represent all of us. So I'm going to handpick the white representative to be the spokesperson for white folks. They do it to us.
had Cosby representing the whole black race for 20 years. Knowing they knew. But anyway, I don't understand. Somebody come to me and was like, vote for me and I'll get you a job in a coal mine. Hell no, I'm not voting for you. I don't want a job in a coal mine. But that's white folks. White folks like them kind of jobs. I don't know. They come out with the soot on their face, make them feel a little melanated. But Trump is like, I can't bring the jobs back. I can't put no damn tariffs on China. I can't start no damn, and I can start one, but I damn sure wouldn't win a trade war with China. I can't have Billy Bob Thornton making iPhones and Nike sneakers. I can't do none of that. But one thing I did promise him, I can bring down the hammer on immigrants. I can beat the hell out of the blacks and scapegoat the blacks. And so the white man's sitting there like, God damn it, I thought I'd be making iPhones and in the coal mine. I was going to make iPhones in a coal mine. You promised me. It's like, yeah, but you know, I'm getting those black identity extremists. You see me? Shithole countries. You see me? And did you see me throw that Mexican that's been here for 40 years? Dumped his ass right back in Mexico. And look at that Haitian. I'm flipping over Haitian boats. And sending them back to their hellhole of a country. And so the white folks are going for it. Now, I don't have my coal mining job. I still, everything I own is still made in China. But he's sure keeping those colors in their place. He's giving them a real what for, I tell you. And that's what it's all about. It ain't got nothing to do with you. Trump is trying to appease his base. And now y'all want to get mad and don't call. Don't y'all say, y'all can't say nothing. You see a Trump voter, you see a white person in a MAGA hat, you black folks, you just put your head down and you keep walking. Because Obama didn't give us that much. Trump, at the very least, is giving his people empty policies and strong rhetoric. He's giving them, not empty, symbolic policies. Trump has no intention on kicking all the Mexicans out. Wall or no wall. And I guarantee you, if you save up your money and you get a trip and you go stay at Mar-a-Lago, yo, you ain't even got to go down to Mar-a-Lago. Come with me tomorrow. There's a Trump Tower right downtown, Chicago. Big Trump. You go down, I think it's Wabash. If you drive down Wabash from the south side heading north, like for 4 miles out, you'll see this big Trump in the middle of the street. Giant Trump, miles out. You just got to drive towards the Trump. I guarantee you, ain't one word of the Queen's English being spoken in the corridors of Trump Tower. You go to the kitchen, you go to the maintenance area, you go to whoever's cleaning them damn windows, who's vacuuming and mopping those floors, who's attending the parking garage because he's got, you know, a multi-level parking garage. You go there. And you mean to tell me it ain't Immigrant Central Station? Now, I know some of the white folks think you go into a Trump business, then it looked like an episode of Hee Haw. Who remember Hee Haw? But Trump is using migrant labor. And why do they use migrant labor? Because it's cheaper. Why is it cheaper? Because the people are desperate and they don't have rights. And that really gives capitalists the hardest erection they could ever have. Capitalists from the day, back before we called it capitalism, back when we called it mercantilism. Way back when, they've always said our number one enemy is labor. We don't want literate laborers. We don't want educated laborers. We don't want empowered laborers. We got migrant laborers. They can't vote. They can't challenge what we do. They can't challenge wages. Migrant labor, you're going to have slave labor. You're going to have exploited labor if you got capitalism. So Trump has no intention of kicking y'all out. And Trump also knows, and even if Trump don't know, the FBI, CIA, ATF, BTAF, the alphabet boys, as they call them in the hood, they know damn well ain't no black group ready to carry out a military insurgency. You know, He's black, the most militant black group right here in the Nation of Islam, the Fruit of Islam, militant black, white man, devil talk, all that stuff. They can't deal with no balding potbelly cop from the corner, let alone take on the U.S. military or the U.S. government. They know damn well the real identity extremists are these white boys, their militia movements, the white sovereignty, the white separatists. They know who the real threat is. But Trump can't put that up. So Trump is trying to create this straw man and tell white folks, your pain, your joblessness, your suffering, your loss of affluency is Mexicans and black militants, uppity blacks and rapist Mexicans. This ain't got nothing to do with us. I know we think we special, but this has nothing to do with us. And I know that hurts some of y'all so bad. That hurts some of y'all so bad because y'all really don't want no one to get between you and your oppressor. It's a classic dysfunctional abusive relationship. Very classic. All the trappings. So when Trump says black identity extremists, it ain't got nothing to do with black folks. He's got to convince this white person in rural America, in suburban America, who seldom interacts with a Mexican. Because remember, for years, up until from 2001 up till 2017, they were able to tell them terrorist, Islamic extremists, the Muslims are going to get you. Bin Laden's going to get you. That's worn off. White folks aren't scared of Muslims anymore. They don't want to hear it. When the last time you heard the color? Remember the color code? We're at code yellow, code blue, code green, code red. And white folks was bugging out. And remember, all the white men had all the American flag on their lapel and the terrorist. Before that, it was the communist. And so the white man was like, hey, you know, things ain't as good as for me. You know, I've only got about $750,000 in my bank account. You know, last year I spent 3 weeks on unemployment before I got another good job I'm not qualified for. I've only got 3 cars. My dad had 4. You know, in the last 10 years, I've only been able to buy 2 or 3 properties. Hard times for white folks. And so they got to blame. And he's like, well, when white folks finally figure out who their true enemy is, the greatest threat to white folks are the white elites. It's always been that way. There's never been a greater threat to white people than white elites. Never throughout history. I don't care if you want to go back to the monarchs. I don't care if you want to go back to the Viking warlords. Even go back to the era of the Mongolian hordes. When you look at the Genghis Khan and the Asian hordes, the Mongolian hordes that fell upon Europe, it was the white noblemen that were selling them out. It was the white noblemen. When Attila the Hun, Genghis Khan, it was the white elites selling out their own people. Now, white elites ain't unique in this. Black elites been doing the same thing, especially now. But that ain't what we're talking about. That's a different discussion for a different day. So when white folks, the few times in history, they finally were not, when the white elites, the white noblemen, the white monarchs, were no longer able to say, it's these out people, it's the Catholics, it's the Jews, it's the blacks, it's the Asians, it's the migrants, it's the, you know, devil worshipers, it's the Muslims. Here come the guillotine. Now, if the rednecks figured out what the deal was, they'd have Trump and Melania be out, let them eat cake. I don't know what the Eastern European equivalent of cake is. Let them eat crumpets. It'd be guillotine. Please keep that door shut. It'd be guillotines. And so they can't run. Now, they might be able to cycle back terrorists. They'll need another large false flag terror event or something. And they can bring, say, because there's no Bin Laden. They keep bringing up these random names. Bir al-Assad. Assad. It just doesn't have the ring to it. Assad used chemical weapons. Assad used chemical weapons on who? Other sand niggers? Don't care. They went, oh, Assad's gassing his own people, which is a lie. But, hey, people aren't scared of communists anymore. So they have to prop up a new threat, even the immigrants. So they had to prop up a new threat. And they didn't, we back up. Our number has come up again. And we ain't been up since the 60s. Militant blacks. Oh, that's a old, the white folks is running out of excuses. I think it might be guillotine time for the white elites. Might be a purge. Because by the time y'all going back to that, that's the old box. That was the dusty. The FBI had to go. And so black identity extremists. Is it going to stick? And I know black people hooping and, oh, Lord, they coming after us. Oh, Lord. But how are white people taking this? Go ask your white friends. So what do you think about this black identity extremist thing? Boogie, boogie, boogie. Boogity, boogity, boogity. See if it scares them. See if it scares them. Trump came out the gate saying Mexicans, with the people coming here, the illegal immigrants, they're not sending their good people. They're sending their rapists, their murderers, even the drug cartels. But most of the white people are on drugs, so it's kind of hard to scare them with drug dealers. You say to the white man, the Mexicans are coming here with drugs. And the average white person going to be like, where did you say? You know, you say drugs, you say, you know, opiate crisis. Are they coming with opiates? Yeah. Shoot, that might, you know, make white folks start voting pro-immigration. What? You didn't say they were coming with drugs. You know, I'm going to vote pro-immigration. Let them get here. So the bottom line is, this black identity extremist thing ain't got nothing to do with it. We just scapegoats. We just pawns in the game. Shout out to Professor Griff for that horrible song. Dun, 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 dun. Just pawns in the game. That's all we are. And I know it's hurtful to hear it. I know you really like to believe that white folks are losing sleep behind black militants. That we really got the U.S. military spooked out. But we don't. We don't. They ain't scared of you. They're not. We just pawns in the game. So, tell Griff. Oh my goodness.
Y'all and all better get ready. Listen to me. Listen. I don't want no applause. I want you to hear what I have to say.
This is the situation. I'll make you understand. I'm fixing this world and how I'm living as a black man. Striving to be somebody that can be respected. Hold on a second. We're looking because I'm elected by the G. The O. The D. 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 It's like the Mar.
I'm sorry. I had to put that up because that Griff pawns in the game. So, I know what you're saying. Bro Diallo, you saying this is just rhetoric. This black identity extremist is just another in the soup to keep white folks distracted. This is just a way for Trump to pretend like he's representing his core constituents without actually doing anything from them. He's creating a false threat and then protecting them from it. So if I could come to the black community and tell the black community, we're under threat from Martians. And black folks are like, the Martians are going to kill us all. And I'm like, the Martians won't kill us all if you listen to and follow me. And then you listen to and follow me. Martians don't kill us. I've done it. I've saved you. But first, I got to convince you that the threat is real. So Trump is telling